couple months ago, I had the opportunity with my wife, Ann, to go to my very first opera. We went to see Oscar, Opera Philadelphia's presentation of Oscar at the Kimmel Center. And I tell everybody, one of the coolest things I've done in a long, long time, because I'd never been to the opera before. Like many of you, and I know some of you are enlightened and you've seen opera, live opera, but like many of you, I perhaps had this preconceived notion about opera that I wouldn't understand it, or I wouldn't get it, or whatever my situation was. But I'll tell you, once I tried it, I just, all I wanted to do is go back for more, and hopefully I'm going to get that opportunity, because coming up June 5th, 7th, 10th, 12th, and 14th at Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center, Opera Philadelphia presents the world premiere of Charlie Parker's Yardbird. I'm just going to read from the promo here because it's just such a great sentence. In that empty twilight between life and death, tortured jazz soloist Charlie Parker composes his final masterpiece, revisiting the inspirations, demons, and women who fueled his creative genius. We have in the studio today, very, very happy to have and meet Lawrence Brownlee, who is an American tenor. This piece was written especially for him. You played the bird in this opera.
Yes, I do.
And welcome to XPN. It's really nice to meet you.
Thanks,
and,
Dan. Thanks for having me.
Fellow Buckeye, by the way, from Youngstown, Ohio.
H-I-O.
That's right. Tell me how you got into it. You don't come from a, you know, your family didn't necessarily, weren't opera lovers, nor were mine, but how did you first get exposed to opera?
Well, it's interesting. You said, you know, people have this idea that opera's not necessarily for you. I, like many people, I used to watch TV and saw someone with horns on their head singing in a language I didn't understand. And I thought that was opera was. And I thought, hey, that's not for me. I was involved in music in high school, junior high school, and people said,
choirs, you did choirs, church singing.
Church
as well,
choirs.
Right.
My dad directed the choir at church, and my mom sang solos. I come from a very musical family. There are six kids in our family, and my dad used to force us to sing. But once I got into school, people would point me out, and when we would sing in choir, and they say, hey, you have a nice voice. You should do something with it. Mm-hmm. I was very shy about singing, but I got a little bit more brave when people would tell me, hey, you know, girls will think you're cute if you sing. So it was one of the things that fueled my singing.
As fueled so many things, right?
Yeah. I got into high school, and then my show choir, as a result of being in that show choir, I got a chance to sing in a recital. And at this recital, there was a gentleman who approached me, and he said, you have something special that you have to share with the world. You have a great voice for opera. So.
Amazing. I mean, you have been lauded as one of the great American tenors. That's remarkable. That's so nice. And you got to tell me. I have to know the bel canto repertoire.
Yes,
that's your expertise. That's your area of expertise. What is that? Can you tell me?
Bel canto.
Bel canto.
Bel canto. Yeah. Bel canto translates as beautiful singing. And it was the main composers were Donizetti, Rossini, and Bellini. And so probably about 95% of the repertoire I sing are those composers. So I've gotten a chance to live in Italy, to study people who really know the style of those composers.
Wow.
And so that's really, for the most part, what I do.
What would you say to somebody, you know, I mean, obviously you're in the middle of it. I know what I would say to somebody, like if they asked me how I liked my first opera, but what would you say to somebody to sort of urge them to go try it out that's never been to opera before?
Well, I tell people to go with an open mind. People have this idea, okay, I won't understand it. It's in a foreign language. It's going to be a whole bunch of fat people on stage and singing something I just don't know. But I think if you can understand human situations and see yourself on stage, see people interacting in a very natural, normal way, I think people can go away from opera saying, okay, that's not what I thought it was. It doesn't frighten me. There's not an enigma with that. That is a very real human situation.
It's
just like watching, just like watching a movie or a TV series. So the situations are real, and I think the people and the characters are real, and people can connect with them, and the music helps that.
Now, this Charlie Parker's Yardbird, it's in English. So,
yes, it is.
It's in English. So, you know, something else that I just read about is that this part of the bird of Charlie Parker was written with you in mind. I mean, what a nice honor that must be.
Yeah,
right?
It's very flattering.
Does that happen very often?
It doesn't. This is the second world premiere that I've had the chance to be written for. 10 years ago, I got a chance to do something in London, England, and this is the second one. But I'm the title character in this one. So, again, I'm very flattered. And
I bet.
The composer, he came to hear me me sing in New York City. I was performing there, and Opera Philadelphia had a relationship with him. So the three of us got together, and he, being a composer and jazz saxophonist, he felt like what I do as a singer could lend itself to doing an opera about Charlie Parker.
Now, how much did you know about Charlie Parker before this?
To be honest, I wasn't a big aficionado. Of course, I knew about the bebop and stuff like that too. But the great thing about me studying this character and the life of Charlie Parker is I've had a real education on his life and his contribution to music in general.
What should we know about Charlie Parker?
Well, people, I think the most, you know, when people think about Charlie Parker, the first thing they think is addictions. They think about, you know, he struggled with drugs. But you think about his struggles, his life growing up in that era in the South, 1920 to 19, I mean, a very, very short life, a very full life. But his impact on music today, I think you can see what he did, what he expounded upon, and how he grew the craft of music. I think you can see, if you turn on the radio on any station, you can see how he moves through the keys and his transitions and his brilliance through the staff that I think you can see everywhere. But I think you'll get a chance to see the demons that, you know, he struggled with. And, of course, his addiction with women, his love for music. The second act aria talks about, you know, all the things that he loved in his life, but the thing that he loved more than anything was his horn. So I think you'll understand the great love he had for the horn.
And, you know, it's the same thing for me, and I am not a jazz aficionado either, even though I know what I like. I'm a bebop guy, but, you know, I mean, I don't know much about it or how they do it, but, I mean, when I hear Miles Davis, when I hear John Coltrane, when I hear Charlie Parker, there's genius at work there.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think anybody with an ear can hear that.
Absolutely.
And there has to be something behind it. And so often, not just in jazz, or any art form, a lot of times these geniuses are tortured.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is? I've often wondered that myself.
You know, I think access to different things and the opportunities that were perhaps not allowed. Of course, when you think about the life of Charlie Parker and all those people like Thelonious Monk and Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie, drugs were rampant during that period. I think part of it was cool. Like, you know, if you smoke, then I'm going to smoke. And people think, okay, I have to take drugs to be great. And of course, Charlie Parker, I think it was Billie Holiday, other people said it wasn't the drugs. It was the torment, the life things that they dealt with in their own personal lives. And so I felt like, you know, I feel that probably their music and his expression of what they have inside, that they have to get out. And it's a torture to say, I have to get this music out.
Yeah.
You have to get it out to the world. So,
once again, we're talking with Lawrence Brownlee. He is he's the title character in the upcoming Opera Philadelphia world premiere of Charlie Parker's Yardbird. OperaPhila.org for details. It's at the Perelman Theater at the Kemmel Center. I got these dates right, I believe. June 5th, 7th, 10th, 12th, and 14th coming up here. You guys are in the middle of rehearsal. What's that like? What's the process like? When you first get together, how long have you been working on it? How long does it take to get it ready? And what's it like? Because I've been in rock bands. Is it like rehearsing for a big gig? Or?
Well, we've had the music. It's come to us in parts. Of course, this is something that's been written for us, and it's had to be whittled down a little bit and changed a bit in order to work for us from a dramatic standpoint and also a musical standpoint as far as like the number of instruments in the pit, the orchestra.
Sure.
So we've had it for about a year and a half, and so we've had a couple workshops. But anything that doesn't have a precedent, you're doing it in that moment, so you don't know how it will be received, what you should do with it, how you want to tell the story, that it reads from a dramatic standpoint again and also a musical standpoint. So it's very much an evolution. And so, you know, the beginning of this process is not what is going to be at the end. And so I'm very excited to see what it will become, but already very excited what I've seen thus far. And the stage director and the composer, they've all been, it's been a real team effort to come together to bring this story together that it will read to the public and they'll understand what's going on.
Now, I can imagine that the plot and the words of this have to be just filled with drama.
Absolutely.
Are there punches pulled, or is it pretty straightforward?
No, it's pretty straightforward.
You see him at his worst and best.
Yeah, you see him, and I think you have to appreciate the struggles that he had. Yeah, and of course, there's some real situations that people will say, "Wow," but it's the truth about his life. And I think when people come to the theater nowadays, they want to see the truth. They don't want something necessarily watered down, but they want to understand what a person really struggled with in their life in that time that they lived.
You've had an interesting career thus far. What do you want to do after? Do you have plans after?
I don't know. Maybe I'll be. I don't know. I have many hobbies. You know, fantasy football. Maybe I'll have a fantasy football. I don't know.
Who's going number one next year?
You know, I don't know. I think it's going to be a couple receivers in the top in the first round. But of course, I think people, when you think fantasy football, everyone goes quarterback nowadays.
Well, you got to take a running back. That's what they
say. Tell me one person that's a three down running back anymore. A three down running back doesn't exist anymore.
You're right. I like those big guys that punch it in. They get a lot of those 6 points.
Yeah, but Arian Foster, he's on the downward. Yeah.
You think so?
Adrian Peterson, we don't know what's going to happen with him.
Yeah.
DeMarco Murray is in a new system.
He sure is.
Le'Veon
he's in our
Bell.
System.
Yeah, that's right. Le'Veon Bell, he's suspended for 3 games. I mean, who's the three down?
I'll get in touch with you before the season and see if you have any inside information. That's for sure.
Odell Beckham is going first round.
I think so.
I think he should.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah,
you're a big Steelers fan too, huh?
To the day I die.
Shouldn't really tell anybody that.
I'm very proud of that.
You're a nice guy for a Steelers fan. I really like you. I do.
I like you too, Dan.
Appreciate that. All right. Well. Musically too, to get yourself ready for this, I'm sure you listened to a lot of Bird, a lot of Parker, especially because if you weren't real well versed in his repertoire,
absolutely,
you had to go back and listen. Mm-hmm. But if I went to your house and looked through your records right now, what would I find?
Oh, you'd find a lot of stuff. I have rare Latin salsa. I moonlighted as a salsa DJ.
How'd you get into salsa?
I started dancing salsa years ago.
You were dancing?
Dancing salsa. Then that increased my love for salsa, so I began collecting, and a bunch of my buddies actually from Philly who really told me about some of the great Colombian and Puerto Rican musicians, and
there's some great stuff.
Great stuff. Our buddy Chino.
Yeah, our syndicated show World Cafe, we do a Latin roots segment periodically, and I've heard some amazing salsa, especially.
Fantastic. People think of, when you think salsa, they think like Buena Vista Social Club, but there are people like Grupo Bayamon, Papo Diaz.
Oh, these guys slow down, don't they?
They get crazy.
so we find some salsa.
Salsa,
I'm
gospel.
Sure, some opera records.
Some hip hop, some of this stuff from the 70s. Of course, I got a lot of Earth, Wind, and Fire. I'm a big Michael Jackson fan, I have to say.
Hey.
I love the guy.
Oh, wow.
Prince.
Yeah.
Mint condition.
Steely Dan, you said.
Oh, Steely Dan, yes. Yeah. I have that Josie Pegg that was,
Oh, yeah.
That's a great album.
The Asia album.
Yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
Chicago. Peter Cetera. I mean, I love it. I have a great love for a lot of different styles of music, which is fun for me, being an opera guy, being able to make this crossover to this jazz opera.
Yeah.
And people say, how can you go from opera to jazz? And I say, hey, man, I like a lot of different styles of music.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to be able to go outside of that. But
I think it's going to serve you well as you go on.
I hope so.
What's on the business end? You're an independent contractor.
Yes.
I would assume. So you have a manager.
I have two.
You have two managers.
Yes.
So what's it like? I mean, do you field offers from different opera companies around the world and
exactly
decide what you want to do? And,
exactly.
Huh.
And you know, for me, what I wanted to do is establish myself in my repertoire. So I've done Rossini and Bellini and Mozart for a long time. But now that I've done that and I've got a chance to perform it in, you know, some of the world's most important theaters, now that I can say, okay, I want to do some interest projects. And so Charlie Parker, I wouldn't call it an interest project. It was something, of course, my relationship with all of Opera Philadelphia wanting to come back. But this is something that I can say, yes, I want to do this now and do something that's fun, something that inspires me, something that challenges me, both dramatically and musically, yes.
And a little off the beaten path.
Absolutely.
When it comes to opera.
Yes.
Now, are you going to go back? Do you think you'll go back into more mainstream opera after this?
Well, I will continue to do things. And, you know, my life is always evolving. I'm a father of two and a husband. And so, you know, at some point I will probably maybe go into academia and do other things. That's not tomorrow, but I'd like to think that I could do a lot of different things. I have a lot of different interests, and hopefully that I'll be able to make music or be a part of music my whole life.
Do you love performing, though, in front
of
people?
I do.
Nothing like it, is it?
There is nothing like it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Larry, it's really nice meeting you. Lawrence Brownlee, do you
Thank
have
you,
a
Dan.
Website? Where
I do. It's www.lawrencebrownlee.com.
That's BROWNLEE, LawrenceBrownlee.com. This is coming up here, June 5th, 7th, 10th, 12th, and 14th, world premiere of Opera Philadelphia's Charlie Parker's Yardbird at the Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center. I understand tickets have been going very well for this, so congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
And I would, once again, I'm going to come out and tell everybody that if you've not seen live opera, go see live opera. I remember I used to try to watch hockey on TV, Larry. I would try to watch hockey. and I couldn't follow the puck.
Yes.
And I was like, I was kind of a hockey fan. The first time I saw a live NHL game, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever invented. It's so fun. And once you see it, then when you watch it again on TV, okay, you can understand it a little better. Mm-hmm. I equate it to that. It's just a wonderful, visceral, loud experience and very, very cool. So if you haven't tried it before, you guys ought to look into it. And this might be a real good stepping off point for people who have never been to the opera.
I agree.
And Charlie Parker was indeed a genius. Nice to meet you, man.
Thanks, Dan.
Come back again. You
Thank
said you're
going
to come back
me.
And play guest DJ.
I would love to.
All right. Let's hear the Yardbird Suite by the great Charlie Parker right here on 88.5 XPN. The Yardbird Suite from Charlie Parker here on 88.5 XPN. And thanks again to Lawrence Brownlee. Nice to meet him. He's the featured performer on this new Opera Philadelphia presentation of Charlie Parker's Yardbird, the world premiere here in Philly at the Perelman Theater, Kimmel Center, OperaPhila.org for tickets and details.